like this and have the time to do these sort of things in our busy schedules, but still with enough freedom of choice and time to gather on a Tuesday morning to spend some time talking about biblical things. It's a great blessing, and we appreciate you all for having the interest that brings you out this morning. I don't know about you, but I have always been particularly fond of studies in what we call the field of evidences, things that prove what we believe to be true. I think it's so important. I find it particularly interesting, but beyond interesting, it's very important. It's important for us to know not only what we believe, but also why we believe those things, and what's the evidence that supports the conclusions that we've drawn. What's the evidence for our faith? It's just really an important field of study, I believe. Because when we're asked, why do you do that, or why do you believe that, it's got to be more than, well, I don't know. It's just what we've always done, or it's just what my mom and dad did, and I'm doing the same things that my mom and dad taught me to do. I believe because my mom and dad believed, and their parents before them believed. I don't know about you. Now, speaking for myself, I come from such a family. My parents were faithful Christians. My grandparents were faithful Christians. And I am so thankful that that was handed down to me. Lots of people didn't have that leg up, so to speak, and had to learn things on their own. I learned them from my parents and my grandparents. I think I told Mark that when I was a teenager growing up, the congregation where we worshiped had three elders. And one of them was my grandfather, and one of them was my father. And so that's sort of the heritage that I come from. And I'm so thankful for that. But it's not enough to say, that's what my dad believed. That's what my grandfather believed. It's not enough. I need to know why I believe myself. And so that's why we engage in the study of evidences. And I really think it is so important for us to be able to do that. Skeptics and critics say that those of us as Christians, we've just made the so-called blind leap of faith. They argue that what we believe doesn't make any sense. It's not reasonable. It's not logical. And we've just sort of closed our eyes and said, I'm going to believe it anyway. I don't care. I think when they make that accusation against us, they're actually showing how uninformed they really are. Because that is not the case, is it? We believe because we have considered the evidence. We've come to a logical conclusion based upon the evidence that has been presented. Well, this morning we want to engage in a study of evidences of a sort, but it's quite a bit different, I think, than what we usually do, because this study centers on the Chinese language. That's doing that again to me, Mark. Does that thing go to sleep after a while? It's on. Let's see. I'll get here in a minute. There it goes. Our study this morning centers on the Chinese language, and it might be kind of shocking to say, well, how would the Chinese language prove anything to us about evidences? Well, hopefully we can demonstrate that to you. A number of books have actually been written along this line, and I want to share some of that information with you. It's not original with me whatsoever, but we'll talk about that in a minute as we get into our study. Again, we thank you for being here to be a part of this study this morning. The book that I have in my library that speaks of the kind of things that we're going to be discussing this morning is this book, and I know it's still available. You can get it on Amazon. You can get online lots of places. The Discovery of Genesis, How the Truths of Genesis Were Found Hidden in the Chinese Language. And this book is by a couple fellows named Kang and Nelson. There are others, actually, but this is kind of a well-known one, and a lot of people have read it. You're welcome to look at my copy there, and I know, as a fact, that it is still available online. You can order it. So, what about the Chinese language? Well, we know that the Chinese language is the oldest continuously written language in the world. The written Chinese language is several thousand years old, so it's been around for a long time. And the individuals who originated this written form of language did it in a very simple way. What they did was they drew pictures to express words or ideas. And so you can imagine that in your mind, because I know you have seen the Chinese language in written form, and it's like tiny little pictures. And those little pictures were designed to express things, to express words and ideas. And then, of course, what they did, as that evolved into a little more thorough system of written language, they began to combine different symbols to make more complex words or thoughts. And so in a quite complicated sort of picture, there might be several elements bunched together to convey a thought. Let me give you an example of that sort of thing. In Chinese, that symbol stands for a mouth or a person. So you can kind of see, you can kind of envision that mouth, and that was used to represent a person. Keep that in your memory here, because we're going to see, as we go through our study this morning, we're going to see that image in particular several times. Sort of a rounded off square meant a person's mouth, but it stood for the person himself. And then that symbol was meant to represent the legs of a man or the man himself. And so you've got a mouth and legs, you've got a person. You add those two things together, the symbol looks like that. So you see the two parts of it. And that symbol stood for older brother. Older brother. Well, the fact of the matter was that the mouth man or the spokesperson for a family was usually the older brother. So he's the mouth man. He's the spokesperson. He is the older brother. And you see how they put a couple of simple things together and they came to a little bit more complex sort of a thought. What we know is that well-known things in history, common everyday things, were used to make words so people could remember them. And that's how the written Chinese language began and evolved over many, many centuries. And as we said, it's the longest continuously written language in the world. All right, so someone said, okay, that's fine. We got that. That's not too hard to understand. How does that help us in a study of evidences? That's the big question. And so let's do a little bit of background study. Let's go back to the Tower of Babel. Now, the events that happened at Babel are recorded for us in Genesis chapter 11. I want you to turn there and let's read a few verses there at the start of Genesis chapter 11. You know the story. Our children study this story in their Bible classes. But there's some really vital information for us there in the story of the Tower of Babel. Genesis chapter 11, verse 1. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and slime they had for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. And let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have one language, and they begin, and this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. I remember as a little kid thinking that they were going to build that tower to heaven, and they were going to go right up to where God was in heaven, and he didn't want them to be able to do that, and he stopped them. Well, of course, you can't build a physical tower that will take you to the place where God is in the spiritual realm. What really was the problem, obviously, is that following the flood, in Genesis chapter 9 at verse 1, God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. So that was the instruction that men had following the flood. And God didn't want them to stay in one locality. He wanted them to scatter. He wanted them to replenish the earth as they were instructed to do. And I actually think that their expression there, let us make us a name lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth, was a statement of rebellion against God's instruction for what He wanted them to do. And so their effort at Babel was to build this tower. I suppose we could call it sort of a focal point for their civilization. This tower will be the central feature, and it will keep us all together. We won't go far. We'll be able to see the tower. We'll stay nearby. God did not want them to do that. And so the way that God addressed that problem and solved it was to confound the languages. As we read there, everyone up to that point in time had been speaking the same language. And at Babel, their languages were confounded. Now there's no use staying together because I can't understand you. In fact, it's really frustrating to me to try to talk to you because I don't understand what you're saying and you don't understand what I'm saying. I'm leaving. And that's sort of what happened, right, at the Tower of Babel. People were scattered. Now, think about that for a minute. Up until the Tower of Babel, they'd all been together and they had all been speaking the same languages. And their history was common between them. All of them had the same history. They all, you know, if before they were scattered, someone could say, do you remember when? Or did you hear about our great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy and what he did? And they'd all say, yeah, I know about that. They all shared the same history up to that point in time. And so the first 11 chapters of the Bible record a history that all people would have had in common. Everybody had the same. In fact, they share our history, right? The history of the first 11 chapters of Genesis is our history. We had ancestors at the Tower of Babel, right? And so the idea is that as they scattered from Babel, they all went, but they all took with them the history that had happened before. The things that they knew of, that had been handed down to them from generation to generation. The location of the Tower of Babel was in the Tigris-Euphrates River Valley. The Tower of Babel, we see in that how that name evolved to Babylon. Today, that region would be in the modern-day country of Iraq. Unfortunately, we know a lot about Iraq because of military exercises that have been engaged there in the last 20 years or so. So we know about the Tower of Babel location because we know about Iraq. That's where Babylon was. If the Bible is true, and we absolutely believe it is true, then all nations migrated or moved away from this particular area, Babel, Babylon, modern-day Iraq. Specifically, the Chinese people, those who became the Chinese people, would have migrated or walked. They would have walked eastward, looking at that map, to get to where modern-day China is. Those people who left Babel would have been traveling toward the east. They would have been coming, I guess here this would be east, right? They would have been traveling east. They would have been coming from the west and traveling to the east, right? All right, look at this. Here's the Chinese word for migrate. And it's made up of these component parts. And we're not going to take time to try to identify that. That more complex image there is made up of these several parts. And if you look carefully, you can pick them out. We're not going to try to do that on this one. We're going to do that with some more here. But there was a great division. That part of that symbol is right in there. There was a great division. And from the west, they came walking. Well, that sounds sort of like the Bible story, doesn't it? There was some sort of great division, and from the west they came walking. Now remember, put yourself in China, and if you were in China, where did those people come from? If they came from Babel, where did they come from? They came from the west, right? A great division. Something about the west and men walking is the story. Oh, I don't know about you, but that sounds suspiciously like what the Bible tells us as to where the Chinese people would have originated long, long ago. Now remember a little bit about our biblical chronology, which can't be very far off. If we put together the pieces of information in our Bibles, you know, I think Bishop Usher was the one who is credited with first trying to identify when creation occurred. And I think he even tries to give, you know, May 22nd, 6006 B.C. or something like that, Bishop Usher says. I don't think you can get that accurate. But if we wanted to guess pretty closely, we'd say creation, according to biblical information, probably occurred about 6,000 years ago. And the flood, about 4,000 years ago. If you just put together the pieces of the puzzle. And so, then Babel was after the flood at some point, but we're talking on the order of closer to 4,000 years ago. The people who eventually became the Chinese people were among those who were scattered from the Tower of Babel. But when they went, they would have taken with them the information that leads up to the Tower of Babel in our book of Genesis. They would have taken that with them. And that word there, migrate, seems to indicate that they knew something about that. Why would they compose the word that way unless they had that bit of information in their history? Let's look at some others. All right, here's the word to create. This is how you would... Now, I've got to be really careful because I got some Chinese students here. Sherry and Xander are studying Chinese. Xander's from China. And so I'll have to be careful. And I hope I don't represent anything here that's not accurate. They can tell me later if I did. But here's the word to create in Chinese. And it's made up of several parts. One part of this has to do with dust, clay, or earth. It is that part of this symbol. This is one of those symbols in which several parts go together to make the word. So part of the word create involves this word for dust, clay, or earth. Oh, there's that mouth again. There's that mouth or person. There was something about a person, and it was connected with dust or clay. This little tick mark right here means alive. From the dust or clay, a person was made alive and he walked. Well, that's kind of easy, isn't it, to connect to the Bible story. Genesis 2, verse 7 says, "The Lord formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. Man became a living soul." That sounds like creation. And that's the Chinese word for to create. That's the verb, to create. But you can see a clear linkage to the Bible story about creation. Now, how did they get that? How would the Chinese have known that? Well, remember, this written language originated a long time ago. And the people that originated the written form of the Chinese language would have had this story in their history. Handed down through generations would have been the story of creation. It's really interesting that Chinese people today, of course, have been educated in atheism. And so they wouldn't know. They know that word. They know that symbol, to create. They don't know the Bible story. They've never been taught the Bible story. But they know that symbol. And they actually know the components that make up that symbol. They don't know why. But I talked to a Christian up in Michigan a while back who had been over to China. And he had shared this information with them, and he said their mouths dropped open when they made that connection. They knew the words, and they knew the symbols for the words. They didn't know why those symbols meant what they meant. And when he showed them from the Bible, he was using this very information, when he showed them that this connects to the Bible story, he said they were dumbfounded. It was very compelling evidence to them. Here's another word, the word west. Now remember what we were saying earlier, we looked at this word briefly a minute ago, but if you were in China and you pointed to where your forefathers came from, you would point to the West. They came from the West, right? Our forefathers were in the West. They came from that direction. That direction was West. Well, what does West mean? Well, West is made up of the symbols man. There's man. See his legs. Y'all are beginning to learn Chinese already, aren't you? You saw those legs, didn't you? There's his legs. This mark, this horizontal slash means first. First man. Now this square, do you notice something a little bit different about this square? This square is not so sort of rounded off. This square is more square. And this square means an enclosure or garden. So, West meant where the first man was in a garden. Wow. That's Garden of Eden, right? How do the Chinese know anything about that? So, they know the word West, and if they take it apart, they see that it refers to a first man or the first man in a garden. That's Adam, right? That's Adam, first man. He was from the West. Here's another one. Happiness or blessing. The word happiness or blessing is made up of here's the symbol for God. You see it right here. Here's God. First, there's first. Man, there's his mouth. God and the first man in a garden. God and the first man in the garden, happiness. Wouldn't that be a great way to identify happiness? It was perfect in the Garden of Eden. Before Adam and Eve sinned, it was ultra perfection in the Garden of Eden. So happiness, or being really blessed, would be like it was when the first man was with God in the garden. That makes sense to us, doesn't it? In fact, actually, that's what we're striving to get back to, right? In eternity, we want to be with God. We want to have that happiness or blessing that Adam enjoyed when he was in fellowship with God in the Garden of Eden days. Happiness or blessing, first man with God in the garden. That one really connects, doesn't it? Here's another, forbidden. You know before we even start talking about this, what's forbidden? What? Now remember, everything we're talking about has to come from the first 11 chapters of Genesis. In fact, the Tower of Babel story is in the first verses of chapter 11 of Genesis. So any of these things that we're talking about would have to come from the first chapters of Genesis. What's forbidden in the first chapters of Genesis? Well, we remember that they were not supposed to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, right? Look how this word is made up. That symbol is tree. There's a plurality in the trees. Among the trees, there was this whole symbol right here is the word for command. In the trees, there was a command. You were forbidden, something forbidden about the trees, right? Tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't eat it. You can eat of all the trees of the garden, but not of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, right? So there we see that. There's no reason. There's absolutely no reason why the Chinese would have made those symbols to represent that word. Now that's a word we use a lot. You're not allowed. You're forbidden. You can't do that. We talk about that all the time in relationship to all sorts of things, right? But why would you have a connection with trees relative to something that's forbidden? Because it's the Bible story, right? It's in Genesis. It's in the first chapters of Genesis. It makes sense. All right? Closely connected with that word would be the word for to desire or covet. And you guys are learning Chinese here pretty quickly because you're seeing the trees already, aren't you? There are the trees, and notice the other part of that word has to do with woman. So you got your trees up here, and this lower part of this symbol is the symbol for woman. What did Eve do concerning the forbidden fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Genesis 3 verse 6 says, the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, a tree to be desired, to make one wise. She desired it. She coveted it. She wanted to eat of that fruit, of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. She coveted it or desired it. Pretty amazing. And it's just, would you agree with me that there's just not any chance in the world that that's just coincidental? That it just happened by chance? There's no possible way that that just happened by chance, right? This has to be what we're saying. The Chinese, ancient Chinese, well, they weren't even Chinese people at the time. Those people who went toward the east from Babel, who became the Chinese people, took this information with them. That's the only way that it could be. Here's another word. Tempter or demon. This word is a pretty complex word, but we remember Genesis 3 verse 1, the serpent said to the woman, yea, hath God said, and so on, and he tempted her, more subtle than any creature of the field, the text says. This is a really pretty complex organization of symbols. So this part right here means something covered or hidden. Well, this whole thing is covered or hidden. It has trees in it. There's your tree. There's two trees. Something hidden or covered in the trees of the garden. There's the garden. That should probably be squared off a little better, I guess, if you were drawing that more accurately. So, something hidden or covered in the garden among the trees with the man, there's his legs, with the man and done in secret. This little part here is secret. Something covered or hidden in the garden that was done by the man while he was among the trees. That sure suggests the idea of Satan tempting Eve and then ultimately Adam. And they partook of that which was forbidden. He was the tempter. And so the idea of a tempter in the Chinese language, even today, conveys a connection to the very first sin that happened in the Garden of Eden. Here's one that to me is just absolutely flabbergasting. I don't know what other word to use. This is amazing. Shipper Ark, you know the story we're talking about. Noah, right? Where's Noah in Genesis? Well, the story of Noah starts in chapter 6, right? And the flood ends by the start of the ninth chapter. Noah and his family are out of the ark, but that's certainly within the parameters of the first 11 chapters of Genesis. So those people would have carried the flood story with them. And I'm sure you've probably heard this before. Wherever various civilizations of men have been found, everyone has some sort of a flood story in their ancient history. Now, some of those stories have been pretty badly corrupted over time, but all of them have some connection with a flood account in their far, far distant past. The Chinese do too. And it's right here in this symbol for ship or ark. So here's the symbol for a vessel. This right here, a vessel. That's the symbol for eight. Xander, am I right? Is that a symbol for eight? It is, isn't it? So there's eight. A vessel with eight mouths or persons. A vessel with eight persons in it. That's Noah's Ark, right? That's Noah's Ark. Amazing to me. There's just no way to escape that. There's just no way to escape that conclusion. Those fellas, thousands of years ago, three plus maybe thousand years ago, when they wrote it down, when they were talking about a vessel or an ark or a boat, they drew a picture about something with eight people in it. Alright, so remember what we said. This has all got to line up in the first chapters of Genesis leading up to the first verses of chapter 11. So that would include these people heading east toward China would have taken with them the story of the Tower of Babel. Tower of Babel. Here's the symbol for tower. So, one. You see here, right here, here's one. Here's the horizontal dash that means one. One mouth. And here the word mouth probably would literally suggest what you say, what you speak. There was one mouth of all mankind. Excuse me, I got that wrong. Here's the one. Here's the one part. One mouth. All mankind, one mouth. There was something about dust. Here's the symbol for dust. This I was wrong a minute ago. This whole symbol right here is for dust, and this symbol is for grass. All of mankind was of one language, and there was something about dust and grass. Dust and grass. What are they doing? They're making bricks, aren't they? Making bricks and building a tower. All mankind was of one language, and they made bricks, and they built a tower, the Tower of Babel. And so, I think in Genesis 11, we see that they had knowledge of that and took it with them. Now, somebody says, let's look at some more. Let's get some more. We can't go any farther, right? We can't go any farther. Well, show me what they said about Abraham. Well, they didn't know about Abraham. Abraham wasn't in their history. And so you won't find any reference to Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob. You won't find any reference to Moses, because all that stuff happened later. And they were already gone. They had gone to China. And now they are isolated in China, away from the events that go on to be recorded in our scriptures. And so the story here and the evidence provided ends at the Tower of Babel. But I don't know about you, I find that to be pretty compelling evidence. And we're always looking for evidence, aren't we? Wait, let's go back to what we were saying earlier. It's very important for us to know why we believe. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15 says, "Be ready always to give an answer to every man that asks you a reason of the hope that is in you with meekness and fear." We've got lots of evidence. If they will talk to us, we can share with them lots of information that explains clearly and logically and reasonably why we believe the Bible story. Right? So, again, if you are more interested in any of those details, I would recommend this. This is really, there are really several dozen more examples. I just picked out some that I thought were particularly intriguing to me, but there are several more, examples of those words in this book, and you're free to look at this. And again, I think it's easily available on Amazon or other sites online. May even be in some bookstores around here. I don't know. Thanks for being here. Thanks for your participation in the gospel meeting all week. Thanks for inviting me to be here. Let's be dismissed with a word of prayer. Gerald, would you lead us in a word of prayer?